On this week's Special Sauce, New York Times restaurant critic Pete Wells tells us about cooking for his kids now that he's home every evening. Remember, this is a person who's used to eating out 6 nights a week. Now he gets to cook and eat lunch and dinner for his 2 teenage sons every day. Pete explains that as someone who got into food writing because he loved to cook, he has really enjoyed returning to the kitchen. Do his sons appreciate his culinary efforts? Well, they are teenagers, but according to Wells, at least they're not complaining. Pete also wonders aloud about the ways his job and the job of other restaurant critics around the country are going to change now that existing restaurants are reopening and new restaurants will also be opening for the first time.
As you look out, I mean, first of all, it must be, a lot of people don't know that before you were the restaurant critic, you were a really terrific features writer and columnist for Food and Wine. Does this sort of kind of reinvigorate you in terms of your own work?
I mean, I'm still trying to write every week because I've got sort of worked my metabolism up to that rate, and I'm afraid to lose that pace now. But you know what's been great is to be able to pick up the phone and call. I mean, normally when the restaurant critic calls a chef, the chef is sort of like, it's like when the doctor's office calls with your biopsy results, you know, they're like, yes, like it's a very strained and awkward conversation. Now I at least get to say, look, I come in peace. I just want to, you know, want you to tell me what it's like out there. And it's been good. It's been good to get to hear some perspective from people who I normally keep at arm's length.
It's true. It sort of fosters a familiarity, almost an intimacy with people that you've had to, as you say, had to, by definition, keep at arm's length.
Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly intimacy. And you still have to sort of, at least at the newspaper journalism model, you're still trying to keep some objectivity. And look, if you completely enter into the mindset of the restaurateur, and have complete sympathy for their point of view, you can't really report objectively on like the employees, you know, because the restaurateur's problems and the employees' problems can diverge, and what's good for the owner is not always good for the dishwasher. So you know, it's important to keep everything in perspective and not you don't want to become an advocate for one point of view because you can miss other sides of the story that are important.
Right.
Nevertheless, yeah, it's been, I mean, it's just been really interesting to hear what people are going through to understand the heaviness of what a lot of people are carrying around right now, you know?
It's true. The heaviness is so, it's like a total eclipse of the sun for a lot of people in the restaurant business. And these are people who, you know, a lot of people who open restaurants, all it takes is a few dollars and a dream. It's, you know, yes, they have to write business plans and all that. But as we know, business plans are just short stories masquerading as nonfiction, right? I mean, you know, it's, and so, whenever I see empty storefronts, all I see are dashed dreams, and they're not even restaurants, right? Mm-hmm. Could be a dry cleaner that closed in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
And
the nature of business is somebody had a dream. It may not even be a dream that involves making tons of money. In a lot of cases, it's not a dream about making tons of money, but it is a dream of not failing, you know?
Right,
It's a dream of just being able to keep doing the thing you want to do and making enough money to do that.
Right, and I think more often than not, that probably is the point of view of almost every chef restaurateur I know, of small, right? They're not, because first of all, why else would you open up a 20-seat restaurant or a 30-seat restaurant?
Well, I know.
By definition can't scale, or even a 75-seat restaurant for that matter.
Yeah. And the dream of making great wealth in restaurants is pretty recent. And and most people are smart enough not to chase after it.
Do you think that there are all kinds of people trying all kinds of things, and I think they go way beyond just doing takeout and delivery? You know, I talked to a chef in DC, or a restaurateur, a guy who owns Seven Reasons, and he's sort of encouraging all his employees to start pop-ups within the confines of the restaurant. So like the pastry chef has started a cake business.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, and one of his sous chefs started a chicken burger business. And he gives them, and he will pay for their, they have to pay him for their supplies, but he puts them on the restaurant accounts and they use the kitchen.
That's super interesting.
And I wonder if we're gonna see more of that kind of thing, more of that kind of creative thinking. And can that be a substitute for the traditional restaurant business model?
I mean, I think a lot of people now are thinking in terms of, you know, having multiple sources of revenue for their business. So restaurants that in the very early days sold off their inventory and then started to sell off their bottles at their bar, they're now looking at it like, you know, huh, maybe there's something I could do with retail in the future. Maybe a little shop in the corner at the front of the restaurant, or, you know, when places reopen at 25-50% capacity, they're going to have lots of room for a shop or a grocery store or a liquor store or whatever they can get in there. And then, yeah, I think the idea of like running multiple businesses under one umbrella is quite interesting to people, because the one original umbrella isn't going to do it right now.
Operating one business is hard enough. You know, right. Operating three businesses under the same roof is probably more than three times as hard.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a weird thing that way. So one more question as it relates to your job, which is, you've obviously made a decision not to, the way some critics have, of not reviewing takeout programs that restaurants have started as a result of the pandemic. Yeah. Was that a conscious decision, or is it just not something you've gotten to yet?
I haven't seen one that really tempted me to review. I mean, my point of view on them is if you're open and you're doing delivery or takeout, good for you, good luck. And the last thing anybody needs is it's funny. There are people who always say, you know, we don't need critics. And then I hear, you know, it's the thing you get all the time. And people write to me and say, what do you think we need critics for? There's Yelp, there's Bono, there's Google, and normally I you know, thank them for their input and say, well, you know, some of my readers do enjoy the service that I attempt to provide. But, you know, now I really do think, who needs critics? Like what is the point of saying that the one of the three restaurants in your neighborhood that will deliver to you isn't that good?
<You know>? Right. Well, right on. I believe that's the definition of cruel and inhuman punishment.
Right. I mean, it doesn't help anybody. It's just the whole part of my job is predicated on there being an abundance of choices. And so
right.
The critic is, among other things, helping you to narrow down the choices.
And to your point, when I think about the people who have done it, they're sort of doing it not as critics, but as rooters. You know, and that's fine.
I think that is perfectly fine.
Because you're right. Anybody who really starts seriously reviewing somebody who's desperately trying to stay in business by offering takeout and delivery really deserves to be you know, excommunicated from the Restaurant Critic Association.
Right. You know, so as a, you know, as a journalist, you could say this is available, you know, which the Times has been doing. Florence Fabricant's been mm-hmm. you know, rounding and finding some interesting stuff. Here are people doing lobster dinners here, you know. So you can certainly do that. This is available. This is an option that you might choose to avail yourself of, but to sort of, I don't know, to do a thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean, forget it. And then the other part of the job is in good times is to sort of not just say this is good, this is garbage, but to take things and put them in context a little bit. And sometimes it means, you know, understanding what the chef is up to, understanding how is Northern Thai cuisine being presented in this restaurant that's different from the restaurant across the street. And none of that really applies now, you know.
No, sort of,
nobody
right.
needs you to, you know, help them understand the meaning of a restaurant right now.
Right. There's only one meaning. Yes. There's only one context. There's only one lens you can look at this stuff through, right?
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, who knows how long it will take? Because I think another thing, restaurant criticism is predicated on is a sort of, you know, a healthy market environment where, you know,
for sure. And God knows how long it's going to take to get back to that healthy market environment.
Yeah.
So are you looking forward to the day when you can get back to reviewing, or are you enjoying this, you know, and I know you're still filing weekly, but is it a welcome change for you?
In a sense it has been. I mean, I you know, I like cooking. I got into food writing in the beginning because I liked cooking. I didn't have a restaurant budget until, you know, some publications started taking my receipts and reimbursing me. But what in the beginning, I was just a cook, and it's been great to do that. And it's been, I really like doing it night after night because I like thinking about what tomorrow's meal is going to be. I like to, you know, have some, I have a very small container of tomatoes right now that I didn't use in last night's dinner. Am I going to use them in tonight's dinner? Maybe. I like, not so much leftovers don't thrill me, but it, you know, they're good to have. But what I do like is sort of this challenge that a lot of us are facing now of like, how do I scrape another meal together out of what's in the refrigerator, because it'll save me from making that one extra trip to the store that we're trying to avoid.
And that's something you never had to deal with, right?
Right. Because you know, in the old days, 2 months ago, I had a night off. You know, I would have a night off, and I would make a dinner, and then that was it. But the economy of sort of thinking about a week's worth of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And also I've got kids and they're home from school. So we sit down and eat lunch now, which is totally new and totally great. It's different, but I found it super rewarding. I'm definitely looking forward to, it's easier for me to imagine going back to restaurants than it is to imagine writing restaurant criticism right now. Like I can imagine getting to a place where I feel safe going back to a restaurant. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the scene and the economy is going to be robust enough that I can sort of write the way I used to write, you know?
Yeah, that's fascinating. So this might actually change, at least for the foreseeable future, when restaurants do reopen. I never even thought of that when I said, oh, I have to call Pete and talk to him about this. But it's true. I don't see how you can look at restaurants the same way as a critic.
Yeah. Well, you know, it'll be a while. And I think when that time comes, we'll know it somehow or other. Or, you know, what will probably happen is restaurants will be back for a while and somebody will open something that sounds really interesting and people will be curious about it. And then, you know, just, you know, the you know, that this you, it's hard if it, it's hard if your job is to tell people what things are like. It's hard to sit there when there's something they want to know. You start to feel like, oh, I gotta just shine up my shoes and get back out there. Yeah. But I don't know when that'll happen. I mean, I do know, I'm sure there are lots of restaurants that are kind of in the pipeline just sitting there right now. But when we'll see them, I don't know.
Yeah. So do your sons appreciate your cooking chops more, and do they appreciate seeing you more?
I don't know about that. But I think they enjoy the food. I think it's
well,
nice.
They are teenagers.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. We can't ask for too much here. I mean, yeah, it's enough that they, you know, they acknowledge my presence. I think they're actually enjoying like getting a meal every single night. And so, I mean, it's just I'm able to put a little more thought into what I cook, and I am there. I'm there 7 nights a week. I hope they're appreciating it on some level, but at least they're not complaining, you know.
That's a start.
When are you going back to work?
You know, it's the other, and it's the last question, I guess, is like your life has changed the way my life and everyone, the rhythm of your life is completely different, right? Mm-hmm. It's like they've torn up the piece of paper that had, this is what you do in a course of a day, in a week. And I found that personally really hard to get used to.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, it's very strange. Like for one thing, I mean, I have all this time at night now, and I get to sort of do what normal people do after dinner. Like a normal person after dinner doesn't sit down and write 1,000 words about what they just ate. You know, like I get to walk away from the table, do some dishes, and I'm like, I don't know, watch a comedy on TV or something, like, you know, or open a book. Like in my normal life, after I have dinner, I come home and I write down every single thing I can remember about it. Everything that anybody said that's relevant, every dish, what was it like, what I think was in it, what did I think of it. That can be it. I can take more than an hour sometimes, depending on the meal. It's trying to reconstruct a whole dinner. If I had 4 people there, and let's say we had appetizer, a main course, and a dessert, well, that's 12 dishes right there that I'm trying to recreate before I go to bed, and it's midnight. It's like,
oh man! All right, well,
it's different. I mean, all these people who like have dinner and then kind of unwind for the rest of the night, like that's a nice life. That's.
All right. Well, thank you, my friend. This was great. This was awesome.
Thanks,
it's always good to catch up. And I can't wait till we can break bread in person again.
I know. I look forward to it. It'll be cool. It'll be cool I always appreciate the, you know, especially, you know, New York City with this amazing wealth of places to go and interesting people to go there with. I always appreciate it, but I'm really going to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Whenever it all comes back.
Absolutely. All right, man. Thanks, Pete. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ed. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
I thought serious eaters would find it interesting to hear how our previous guests are faring. DC restaurateur Ezequiel Vazquez-Guerre has helped 2 more of his employees start pop-ups out of his Seven Reasons restaurant space. The Independent Restaurant Coalition has prevailed upon Congressperson Earl Blumenauer to bring a bill to the House floor in the coming weeks to establish an independent restaurant stabilization fund. Whether the bill becomes law in any form remains to be seen, but it's at least a start. Finally, Ovenly's Agatha Kulaga has reopened 2 of her stores, offering a limited menu from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. She has also resumed national shipping via Goldbelly and local delivery in New York via Caviar. And I can't sign off without imploring you to go to SaveRestaurants.com to find out what you can do to help save the jobs of the 11 million people that over 500,000 local restaurants employ. So long, serious eaters. Please stay safe and healthy. We'll see you next time.